Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Click of Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the trade sales through Diamond to retailers for the top 300 trades for July 2009. Joining me as always for these episodes is Chris Marshall. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing good, John.
So I think, again, no huge surprises here. If anything, it's kind of almost, I don't say neck and neck for the top two slots on the breakdown on the top 300, but, I mean, DC had 29.28% of the total units for the top 300 and 29.10% of the total dollars for the top 300. And Marvel, really not that far behind with 24.94% of the units. So about, 4% behind there. But actually beat out DC with 30.50% of the dollars for the top 300 trades.
The only thing that surprised me when you sent me this the other day, I kind of looked over it, and if you, the total items, the breakdown of that, with DC having only 27 new items and 51 reorders for a total of 78, and then Marvel splitting it, you know, half and half at 41 new and 40 reorder, but DC only having 27 new items for the month, that seems very low.
Well, again, consider how much of their stuff is, you know, Vertigo stuff. And, I mean, yeah, they do really well on having a heavy kind of reorder presence and stuff. So I think this is a little low because usually Marvel and DC, I think, have a little bit higher number of items on the list each. But it's not like this is, you know, insanely low.
Right, right.
So
That number just struck me right there, though. When I saw 27 new to 41 new, I'm like, geez, that's quite a discrepancy from what we normally see.
Well, and again, 50-50 for Marvel between new and old.
Yeah.
And a third, roughly, of DC's stuff on the list is new, whereas about two-thirds of it is old.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, that in and of itself is an interesting difference between the two publishing companies. Mm-hmm. Now, part of why Marvel beat out on dollars is because they had a few higher-priced items.
Mm-hmm.
DC's highest price item was $75, whereas Marvel's was $99.99. Dark Horse had a fairly good showing, 15 new items, 5 reorders for a total of 20 items that accounted for 9.15% of the total sales by units for the top 300 trades and 8.07% of the dollars for those same top 300 trades. So, I mean, fairly strong sales there.
Mm.
And again, this is another month where, you know, granted both Marvel and DC had a little less than a third, but, you know, we're seeing kind of that three-way split that we often see on the trade side.
Right.
Now, once you factor in, you know, all the non-Marvel DC stuff, you know, that accounts for, you know, 45.79% of the total sales by units. So, I mean, Marvel and DC only edged out, you know, with over half compared to everybody else. But again, on the trade side, not unusual. This is where I think a lot of the smaller publishers, you know, do better and are able to get some of their stuff out in front of more people and keep it out in front of those people a bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else on the breakdown, or jump to the actual list of the top 300?
No, let's head right to the list, yeah.
Okay. Top item, 100 Bullets, Volume 13. It came in with its trade paperback with 8,674 units. That's down about 7.2% from the total known sales of the previous volume, which had 9,347 estimated units. But again, that's also had more time to accumulate those sales, etc. So, standard disclaimers on that. And really, I mean, that kind of a drop between volumes, nothing to worry about. Trades tend to sell slower and longer than monthly books, so. Now, next item on the list is from Dynamite, and that's Boys Volume 4 trade paperback with 7,493 units. That's actually up about 28.81% or 1,676 units from the third volume, which did 5,817 units. So I think Dynamite's having just a lot of success with the Boys. I think it was a smart move for them to pick up that property. And really, they've kept that going a lot longer and stronger than I think anyone had any right to expect.
Yeah, me included. That is a very strong showing for the Boys coming in at number two and with that many units sold.
Yeah, I mean, again, almost 7,500 units. On the trade mm-hmm. side, that's usually going to guarantee you, you know, certainly top five in a highly competitive month, but sometimes it would easily get the top spot. So they're doing well with that. Next up in Volume 3, we've got Batman, Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader hardcover. Did 6,670 units. Now, that's not numbered, so I don't really have an easy way of comparing it to the other Batman stuff at the moment, although someday I'll probably enhance the spreadsheet to do some of that, if I can figure out an easy way to do that. I mean, when they do these kind of, I don't say one-offs, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Out-of-sequence type stuff. I mean, they're doing the same thing in this next slot with number four, rank four, with Green Lantern, Rage of the Red Lanterns hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
That did 6,315 units, which is pretty good, and, you know, I'm really wondering how the Darkest Night kind of lead-up stories are going to do now that Darkest Night is kind of coming into full swing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, we have the potential here to see with Darkest Night what we saw a year or two back or whenever with Civil War over at Marvel, where we saw gangbuster increases on the tie-in issues on the monthly side and then to this huge wave of success when those things hit the trades. Now, I don't know how this is going to play out with Darkest Night on the...
Blackest Night. You keep calling it Darkest Night.
You are correct. Blackest Night.
I was hoping that you were going to correct yourself, but the fourth time I had to correct you.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I've got one of the Blackest Night rings. I'll put it on. Maybe that will help.
There you go.
Long day. For some reason, I keep doing that. Anyways, I'm curious if this event will have the same kind of sales dynamics that we saw on Civil War over at Marvel. I think they're doing a good job at DC keeping people excited about it, getting people interested. I certainly think this event has the buzz. I think they could be doing a bit more to promote it, both in terms of kind of grassroots movements and actual, you know, marketing and so forth through DC. But they've done a strong lead-in with the various Green Lantern and Green Lantern core titles that, you know, we could see a shift over the next couple of months on how DC does.
Mm-hmm. I think Green Lantern is the number one book going on at DC right now. I mean, I could be wrong because I don't read every title, of course, but, you know, I am just loving everything that Johns is doing with this title and also with Green Lantern core and the whole Blackest Night event going on right now.
I think it's some of the strongest stuff. I certainly think Geoff Johns is kind of their MVP these days.
Yeah.
You know, I was sorry to see him get off Justice Society of America. I think Willingham's stepping up to the plate and doing some good work there on equal caliber. But, I mean, with Geoff Johns, you look at the Green Lantern stuff, the Superman stuff, what he's doing over with the Flash Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much everything he touches, at least for me as a reader, is really clicking and really working. And I look at how that's all kind of built up, particularly on the Green Lantern side, to this, you know, wave of excitement and enthusiasm for Blackest Night. See, I got it right that time.
Well, for whatever reason, I think that, and this is what I was hoping when this was going to be the next big quote-unquote event at DC, was that, you know, it seems to me that he has got strong creative control, and I'm picking up all the auxiliary titles to Blackest Night.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm kind of reading them in a row right now, you know, month to month with DCBS. And you're really not missing a beat. And even the art and the dialogue coming from other artists and writers, it seems like it's Geoff Johns' book. I mean, he has really got it all his cards lined up, and it's just a great story, and everything is clicking, I should say.
Yeah. And that's why I'm wondering if we're going to see kind of that wave of success that Marvel experienced with Civil War.
Yeah.
I think what Geoff Johns is doing here is a tighter storyline so far, a more interesting storyline. But, I mean, you go back to how Civil War was promoted with the Whose Side Are You On?
Mm-hmm.
And why isn't DC doing kind of a grassroots, you know, what color is your power ring
mm-hmm.
kind of a campaign? And maybe they are and I'm just not seeing it. But I think there's a few more things they could do to really be pushing this. And not that they're doing a bad job, just that they could and should be doing better. Because I think this is the strongest event property or title, you know, whatever, that they've
right.
had in years. I mean, going back, I would say the Infinite Crisis would probably have been the last one that, because I think Final Crisis people came in with a certain degree of skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think we're going to see some of these Green Lantern things stick around, maybe lower on the list, but certainly on the list for the next few months.
Right. You know, they kind of did that, the War of Colors in the Tales of the Green Lantern Corps, while the Rage of the Red Lantern story was going on. That was kind of like the other story.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I think you're right. They could have expanded the war. And the war is kind of still raging in the early parts of Blackest Night. You've got the Sinestro Corps fighting the Star Sapphires. The Blue Lanterns are going after What's-His-Face and the Orange Lantern.
Larfleeze or whatever, yeah.
Larfleeze. And the Red Lanterns are, you know, they're all pissed off at whatever. And it's still kind of going on. But you're right. They could have stretched that sequence out a lot longer. And I'm left to wonder, and this is pure speculation, but you wonder if all the colors are going to join forces and beat up the Black Lanterns. Because it kind of looks like it's how it's going. But I could be wrong. I mean, because, you know, but, you know, who knows? I'm speaking out of my ass,
I'm curious where they're going to leave this, and are we going to have various Lantern Corps, you know, as ongoing presence in the DC Universe?
Right, right. Well, there's no reason I don't think that the Tales book could turn into that.
Yeah.
You could have a backup every month.
Well, a couple of one-shots or what have you.
One-shots, sure, yeah.
I mean, I certainly don't expect to see a Blue Lantern Corps book or, you know, a Red Lantern and a Yellow Lantern, all these things suddenly having monthly books or whatever. But if they become viable parts of the DC landscape, that would be cool, and that would be a big win.
Well, isn't that kind of like the Catch-22? I mean, Johns and everybody else are making these great characters, and you as a fan are going to want to see more and more of these characters, but then there may not be room for these characters, you know? I mean, that might be the problem.
I think there's room for them, but limited. I mean, they can't do another seven titles for each of, you know, one for each of these different colors. But
right.
They could do one or two that somehow covers, you know, multiple cores. And
right.
do it as a cosmic kind of, you know, corner of the DC universe.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, I think, again, how Rage of the Red Lanterns here did is a good sign. Now, coinciding with the Batman Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader that was at number 3, we've got the hardcover of Superman Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow at rank 5. With 4,912 units. And, you know, nice timing to get the two of those out in the same month.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not the first time I think they've collected Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Well, that's my thing with this book. You know, I said it on my show. Everything that's in this hardcover, the Alan Moore stuff, it's been collected two or three times over. But everything in the Neil Gaiman Batman book has not. That's why I think the Neil Gaiman one sold better. That's just purely my speculation, because If I were to pick one of these two up, I would pick up the Batman one before I picked up the Superman one. I mean, all you got to do is pick up the DC Universe Alan Moore trade paperback, and it's all in there.
Well, I agree there are other places to be getting the Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow story.
Right.
But if I had to choose between those two stories, I'd go with the Superman one. I thought it was better. But, you know, that's again, a qualitative kind of assessment.
Well, maybe I should qualitative this. I have everything already with the Alan Moore stuff. I don't have everything with the Neil Gaiman stuff.
Well, that's the difference of something that was printed back in the 80s versus something that came out last, you know, within the last year.
Well, there's some backup stories in that Caped Crusader one, though, that haven't been reprinted.
True, but the
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But, I mean, they could be doing a better job taking some of those classic stories or whatever and reprinting some of the older Batman stuff.
Right.
I mean, really, with a character like Batman and Superman, if they could swing it and find good entry points and ways to package these as trades, I would kind of start at various points in the timeline. I mean, we got the Golden Age, we got the Silver Age.
Right.
Let's start doing some Bronze Age collections. You know, pick up with the 70s, you know, grim and gritty or relevant storylines, I should say. You know, maybe dive somewhere into the you know, right after Crisis on Infinite Earths storylines and be collecting those things.
I kind of speculated too that these two books, if they were to ever do them in trade paperback, that they could combine these two into a nice oversized deluxe trade.
Yeah, and that would be a logical pairing.
Yeah, and sell it for, you know, $35 or something like that.
Yeah.
Whatever. Might be kind of fun to have all in one volume kind of thing.
I could see that.
And it could be a volume one of, like you said, then go back and do other stories.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Next up, rank 6, we got Mouse Guard Volume 2, Winter 1152 hardcover. It did 4,832 units. Not bad. I think Mouse Guard has kind of cooled off both because of the delays in publishing that Archaea had for a while, and it's not the new, you know, unique book as it was when it first came out. In other words, people have had time to get used to it, and just the newness and novelty has kind of worn off.
Right. I could see that. Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't think there's any drop in quality.
No.
But I did find my interest on the Winter 1152 storyline to be less than I felt for that first one. So, next up, rank 7, we've got Richard Stark's Parker the Hunter hardcover, 4,691 units. This is from IDW. Now, I did not pick this one up. Did you?
I love this book. I absolutely love it. I think you've got to pick this up, John. It is going to be up there as one of the books of the year. Top 10 easily. Maybe top 5.
Really?
Absolutely. Everything about this book is great. Darwin Cook has done this is his magnum opus for right now. It is just awesome. And I cannot wait for more and more Parker books to come out. And it looks like there's going to be one every year for, I don't know how many years, but no, it's really fun. I have not read a bad review anywhere on the internet about this. And, yeah, you really should pick it up.
Well, I mean, Darwin Cook's got a really good track record. So for you to say this is his best stuff, that says quite a bit right there.
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. This stuff is great. And it's, you know, it's classic Richard Stark Parker. I mean, this is 1962. It's everything that Darwin Cook could, he's straight out of 1960. You just look at New Frontier.
Yeah. I mean,
you gotta say New Frontier. I should, you know, maybe step back. New Frontier is an awesome book too. But you know, that was a larger scale. That was Justice League. This is more of an independent title, you know, without any superheroes, I should say. So they're very different. This and New Frontier are two different books, but both come from that same era in the 1960s. And, you know, you could see Parker living in the Justice League, almost living in these two worlds in a way, you know, very different, but that same, it's the same.
He gets the time period.
It's his art. It's his time period. Yeah.
Well, and what I'm impressed with is these are really very strong sales for original material.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see enough original material hitting on the trade side. Everything is either a reprint of stuff that's already been done as comics, or it's, you know, translated reprints from, you know, Japan or somewhere like there.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with any of that. I'm not trying to suggest there is, but until I start seeing a lot more original content, be it things like Parker the Hunter or Empowered or... And really, from there, it kind of drops off as to any ongoing, you know, new material.
Well, I just looked up, just to jump way ahead, at rank 72, the Asterix Polyp from Random House. You know, that's another one that came out the same month, and that got great reviews as well. So there's another book with a brand new graphic novel, quote-unquote, material, you know, original material.
It just seems like it's so few and far between, and until we start getting a noticeable presence of that kind of new material on the list, I gotta go with what's driving the content creation, both in terms of financing it and determining, you know, making the decisions on what they do more of, is on the comic side.
Right.
And, you know, nothing wrong with that. I think there have been some very successful people who've been able to do stuff straight to trade or straight to hardcover, and I think that's awesome, and I want to support that, because when I see the monthly sales continuing to dwindle, I gotta wonder if the mass market sales of some of these things, which are obviously not in these numbers since we're only covering what Diamond sold to retailers, if, you know, there's a large slice of the pie coming into these publishers potentially outside of the Diamond direct market. And, you know, again, I'm just not seeing anyone, any large presence of new material heading straight to that market and bypassing the monthly comics.
Mm-hmm.
Some things certainly are bypassing it, but that's more the exception than the rule, and not doing it in huge numbers for the most part.
Well, I'll tell you what, I picked up the Hunter over at Borders.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a coupon that came through in the email, and I went over to Borders, picked it up, 30% off. And along with, you know, we've got that new Borders where it's got the ink thing going on, and, you know, it's more graphic novels. There's a nicer display. There's bigger bookshelves. There's more of a reading area over there. And along with the Hunter, they had a nice display of other material, including Asterix Polyp, and also Jeff Lemire's Nobody was there.
Cool.
And that was really nice to see, and I'm not surprised to see all those out, because they read like books, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think getting stuff into the mass market is good for comics in general. It gets more people reading it, more people taking it seriously, more people understanding what the medium has to offer. All right, moving on to rank 8, we've got Star Wars Adventures Volume 2 trade paperback, 4,478 units. That's a drop of a little under 10%, 9.97%, and that's 496 units from the total known sales of the first volume. Again, this is just through Diamond. A Star Wars property is going to do pretty well in the Borders, the Amazons, that area. And the first issues obviously had a couple of more months to rack up some additional sales.
Yeah, this is a fun little story. You know, I pick up the Star Wars books too, and the this one, it's, you know, it says, I think it says it takes place 3 years after episode 4, but it reads like it takes place 6 months after episode 4. You know, Princess Leia still has that, she's wearing her white outfit she has on at the awards ceremony. And she is still fighting and bickering with Han Solo left and right. And I'm not going to spoil the story, but you can kind of see the beginning of them falling in love with each other.
Ah.
And it's a pretty fun story.
Cool. Okay, after that, we've got in rank 9, Naruto Volume 45 with 4,290 units. That's an increase of 11.43%, or 440 units, from volume 44. So Naruto's still doing fairly well. Although this was not one of the months where we had like 18 volumes dumped on us. And again, I understand why they want to, you know, crank stuff out faster, but it always seems a little silly to me. Another manga that usually shows up fairly strong is Fruits Basket, Volume 23, in rank 10. It did 4,178 units. That's a gain of 218 units, or 5.51% over the previous volume. So both of those are seeing some increases, and that's good. So that takes us out of the top 10, and not a single Marvel title to be had. I find that interesting and a little telling.
Yeah, when's the last time that happened?
I'd have to go dig around, because usually it's got at least something in there, if not a couple of things.
Well, even in Marvel's first, you know, the closest thing to it is Dark Tower at number 12, and that's not even a, you know, it's not even like a superhero title. You know, I mean, it's very odd.
Well, but the one right below it is Hulk Red and Green Volume 2.
Right.
And so the top-selling Marvel superhero trade did 3,687 units. That would not have even made it onto the top comics list this month, because that bottomed out around 4,050 or something like that. So, you know, Marvel, I think, could be stepping up their game a little bit on the trade side. And I think part of it is when people say they wait for the trade, they'll wait. There's no rush to go get this Hulk volume or half these other things, because there's the belief it'll always be in print. Now, I think we've seen cases where that's clearly not happening, because once you kick out, you know, another, see, how many new, 41 new items this month for Marvel? You gotta pick and choose what you reprint on your existing stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, if every year you're kicking out 400 or 500 new trades, you can't keep that much of an increase in your, you know, line of trades available and keep them all in print. It's just not doable. So I think sooner or later the system's gonna, I don't want to say collapse on itself with that, but start to have some real issues. Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking about Geoff Johns a little earlier. If you go down to rank 19, we got Superman and the Legion of Superheroes trade paperback. Did 2,996 estimated units. Bob and I talked about this storyline at one point on the Weekly Comic Spotlight. I loved this. You know, again, Geoff Johns, he is just knocking it out of the park on a routine basis.
So, I'm not reading this story.
You have not?
Maybe I should pick it up.
Did you read Final Crisis, Legion of Three Worlds?
No, I did not.
This kind of sort of led into that pretty well.
Okay.
If you like, obviously you like Geoff Johns' writing. If you're familiar with Superman and the Legion, this is good stuff.
You know, I've never really gotten into the Legion.
This is a good place to try.
Is it? Okay.
I would try this, and if you're ready for a little Legion overload or whatever, go with Final Crisis, Legion of Three Worlds, where you get not one, not two, but three legions of superheroes. but the art is by George Perez. It's written by Geoff Johns, so
okay,
hard to go wrong with that. I thought this was a great story. This goes back to kind of the classic Legion of Superheroes.
Okay.
So good stuff there. We've got Civil War back on the list in rank 24 with another 2,487 units. That brings the total reported estimated sales through Diamond to 69,566 units. Now, that may seem like a lot, and indeed it is a lot, but if you go down to rank 37, we've got some reorder activity for the first volume of Walking Dead's trade paperback. This has been on the list 52 times before, according to my database. I did another 2,099 units, bringing the total reported estimated sales to 89,309 estimated units. Keep in mind that in years past, when the list only went to 100 items, this wouldn't have made it, but obviously sold some stuff. So he's probably cleared over 100,000 just through Diamond over time.
Oh, yeah. Ugh.
So, I mean, Kirkman's doing all right.
Yeah, I'll say.
So let's see, what else do we got that looks interesting here? We've got the Final Crisis hardcover down at rank 51. with 18,044 units, bringing its total known sales to 10,060 units. Again, little bit of a difference from, say, the Civil War or Walking Dead's first volume. And that's where I don't think Final Crisis and some of the other stuff DC's done event-wise has really had the legs under it. Now, in fairness, the trade paperback for Secret Invasion from Marvel at rank 57, another 1,713 units, bringing its known total on the trade paperback side to only 15,895 units. So we're not seeing the Civil War level of success, you know, even with Secret Invasion. But again, Civil War's had more time to rack up those sales. And that's where the analysis on the trade side is just so different than the monthly comic side. You know, normally a monthly comic, you know, 9 times out of 10, shows up on the list once and that's it. Whereas, you know, we're seeing stuff like that first volume of Walking Dead. It's been on the list 52 times before. And this is a monthly list, so, you know, reorders are just a much, much bigger piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at rank 47, we've got the Watchmen trade paperback, obviously reorder activity there. It, too, has been on the list 52 times, and it moved another 1,462 units, bringing the total reported estimated sales, and just to be clear, this is the total of what has been reported by Diamond, and for an item as old as Watchmen, back when the list was 50 items or 10 items, they did not report beyond those items. Obviously, Watchmen probably sold some copies then. So that would not be included in this total, and this total is 228,098 estimated units.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what we can, you know, kick the tires on and look at the numbers. Again, the total is probably much higher than that. And again, this is just through Diamond. Factor in the you know, I don't know how many zillions of copies they've put out in the direct market. Now, as we record this, we're already into the month of September, and the end of September the 30th is when the consignment program for Watchmen ends. So it'll be interesting to see if, for the August and September numbers, how Watchmen does, and how it does after that when retailers actually, you know, have to pay to get copies into their store.
What do you want to touch on next?
I was thinking down at 107, we got that second volume of The Surrogates from Top Shelf.
Oh, yeah.
Flesh and Bone. I just got the trade paperback myself this past week, so I haven't had time to read it yet. Only did 1,158 units, and to me that's a real shame because I really liked that first storyline. I picked it up on the monthly side. This, of course, went straight to trade. So it's not like people, I mean, this is an original to trade, and it's like, wow, it could have and should have done better. Because the movie for Surrogates is probably going to open on more than 1,158 screens.
Right.
And I just see that difference, and it's like, wow, that's depressing for me.
This is the prequel, right?
This is the prequel.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully when people go out and see The Surrogates that they'll go back and, you know, check out their comic book store and go buy it.
Well, and this is one where, because of the movie tie-in, if Borders, Barnes & Noble, you know, if they put that out on a good end cap when the movie's out, the mass market sales could just totally dwarf the direct market sales,
mm-hmm.
which I think is normally not the case, but again, movie tie-in, particularly something that the retailers, I don't think, based on this, I don't think they were that much behind it.
Well, and you got Whiteout coming out next week on September 11th, and then Surrogates coming out on the 18th. Mm-hmm. So maybe Whiteout will get a push too, you never know.
Hope so. But,
yeah, I really hope so. You know, that's a great story.
All right, what else do we got down here? Let's look at IDW for a second.
All right.
I just finished watching Star Trek, the original series.
Okay.
Because after going with my sister to see the movie, she's like, oh, we should watch the original series. I'm like, okay. So we went through all 3 seasons.
Oh, my God.
And let me tell you, first season, eh, it's all right. Second season was really pretty strong. Third season, not so much.
Not so much, you're right.
But, you know, you look at what they've got here on the trade side for Star Trek, and they've got the second omnibus, the Early Voyages trade paperback. It did 921 units. Star Trek Countdown, which has been on the list a few times before, did 559 units, for putting its total at 3,504 units. And they've also got the Star Trek Archives 5, Best of James T. Kirk, and it did 651 units. And, you know, I look at this stuff and I'm thinking, Star Trek is really, I don't say in decline, but almost forgotten to a certain degree. It's certainly not popular compared to, you know, Star Wars these days. Now, part of it is Star Wars had, you know, has the Clone Wars going on, but I mean, Star Trek just had the movie this year.
Right.
And we're about to, my sister and I, start watching the director cuts of the original cast movies, and I realized I don't have Volume 6, which, I mean, let's face it, that's understandable. So I was looking at some of the DVD stores around town, Best Buy and stuff like that. They're doing good to have any Star Trek DVDs other than, you know, some of the movie or the TV seasons, I mean.
Right.
But none of the 11 or so movies they have out, yet they have all six of the Star Wars movies.
Huh, that's pretty strange.
You know, you look at that, and then you look at how the Star Trek stuff's doing in comics versus Star Wars. I just find that interesting.
Hmm.
You know, both are strong properties, but one of them's having a bit more of a resurgence right now than the other.
I'm surprised that Countdown is so low at 267. I figured that would have a pretty good, it would still be up in like in the top 100 or something.
I agree.
I guess not.
I think it's a little surprising. It tied with the reorder activity for Caliber, First Canon of Justice from Radical, which
yeah,
is also a reorder. But I think there comes a point where unless people are clamoring for this stuff, it's hard for stores to keep all this in stock. They gotta have room for it. They gotta have the money for it. They gotta have the demand for it. Now, at rank 281, we've got some reorder activity for Green Lantern Corps Sins of the Star Sapphire trade paperback. Now, it did 541 units this month, but again, reorder activity, putting its known total to 4,389 units. So I think we're probably gonna see some reorder activity down on the lower end of the list over time for the different Green Lantern stuff as, you know, Blackest Night really kind of kicks into high gear.
You know, there's a ton of Green Lantern on this list this month, which is no surprise. But it just tells you how well this property is doing right now.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you know,
you've got Green Lantern, Revenge of the Green Lanterns trade paperback at 275 with 546 units of reorder activity. You've got Green Lantern, Tales of the Sinestro Corps trade paperback with 681 units of reorder activity. Let's see, what else do we got up here? Green Lantern Rebirth, of course. That
it's the it's this whole series up to what's going on right now, really.
Let's see, Sinestro Corps War Volume 2, Sinestro Corps War Volume 1.
You got Rebirth, you got No Fear, you got Sins. I think that's all the story arcs. Rage.
Where was No Fear? I must have.
No Fear is at 291.
So it is.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they got a ton of this stuff. And that means that stores are, you know, I mean, presumably they got enough to put a copy or two on the shelf originally if they wanted
yeah.
to. And granted, in a lot of these cases, we're talking 500-600 units. Even for Green Lantern Rebirth, we're talking 1,200 units. So we're not talking, you know, huge upswing in sales, but compared to a lot of trades that show up once and never again on these lists, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that accounts for some of that, you know, reorder activity that DC had this month versus, you know, the lower showing of new titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take out the Green Lantern stuff, Fables, Preachers, Why the Last Man, and, you know, maybe one or, well, even just those titles. And you've kind of gutted DC's presence on the list because they have so many of those volumes.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's, to me, that's a sign of success. Because you've got stuff that has enough sustained interest that somebody goes into a store 5 years from now. Odds are you could point them to either Why the Last Man, Green Lantern, Fables, Sandman, Preacher, and have decent odds of getting a sale, if you know what I mean. Getting somebody interested in that material. It's time-tested, it's got the track record and the continued support, and it's got that for a reason.
And the same can be said with the Alan Moore Superman that we talked about earlier and the Neil Gaiman Batman. Well, Neil Gaiman, of course, he mentioned with Sandman, but
yeah,
you know, it's stood the test of time, I think, especially the Alan Moore Superman.
Well, we've also got, I believe, down here I saw All-Star Superman Volume 1. Mm-hmm. At rank 255. True. We've also got, I think I saw the All-Star Batman and Robin show up on this list in here somewhere. So, and DC's doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious again how Blackest Night's going to play out for them, and hopefully it'll be a big success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wonder how they can top it, you know? It just keeps getting better and better and better, so...
I really enjoyed the first issue. I thought the second was, I don't want to say slow, but not as packed as the first. But, I mean, that first had just so much.
Mm-hmm.
They set a very high bar for that.
Well, even the prequel, the Green Lantern, what, 34?
Yes.
And it had the whole Black Hand origin. I mean, that was just some intense reading, you know?
Yeah, that was really well done.
Wow. You know, it was almost like a Marvel Max book at the end there.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, you know, what they left off panel was almost more gruesome than when they had in panel, you know.
Well, it was I'm trying to think how to phrase this. I mean, it was not a light story by any means, but I've got a low tolerance for gore, mm-hmm. and nothing about that sticks out of my mind as saying, wow, that was something I wish they hadn't shown.
Right.
So they did it very tastefully, very effectively.
Yeah.
Whereas other stuff I've read, you know, it's, they'll go for the shock value,
mm-hmm.
and not really have the substance behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, definitely the Green Lantern stuff, and really almost anything by Geoff Johns over at DC these days is stuff I'd recommend.
Right, right.
All right, breakdown of the prices we had. Let's see, what are the most common prices? 54 items at $14.99. It's about 18% of the list. 47 items at $19.99. That was about 15.67% of the list. 10% of the list came in at $24.99. And a couple of things above, a couple of things below. Nothing really jumping out as kind of an odd price point. I do think we're going to see prices kind of shift a little higher over the coming months and years. In so much as, depending how they package these $3.99 books at Marvel and DC,
mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see a corresponding increase on the trade side. Now, at DC, if they only reprint the lead features and leave out the backup stuff, maybe we won't see the increase in price. At Marvel, where they're not really giving us any more pages for the money, we're more likely to see the price on the trades go up when they start collecting all those issues.
Mm-hmm.
So you got anything else?
You know, that is about it. No, like the Green Lantern stuff was that really struck out my mind. Another thing, one quick thing. Where was it? I was surprised to see the Captain Britain omnibus do so well. That sold over 1,000 copies, and I was surprised. I didn't think it was going to get, you know, that high. I thought it was going to be around 700 or 800, but apparently there's a big market for it. And it's too bad that the ongoing is canceled.
Yeah.
As of, what, October?
Actually, it already ended.
Yeah, just, yeah. Well, the Omnibus, just under 1,200 units at $99.99. Coming in at $103.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's too bad because a lot of people who were liking the current series on MI-13 probably went back to go relive the old stuff, and now they're kind of stuck, you know? So it's just kind of a shame.
It is. But, you know, it's kind of understandable, too, because, I mean, they got to do what's selling, and mm-hmm. if they think they can put these people on more profitable books, because that last issue, issue 15, did 16,544 units, mm-hmm. which for a Marvel book, that's certainly I think that's reasonable to cancel it at.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
Now, granted, I'm not happy about that because I was loving the book. I think Paul Cornell was doing some great stuff.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll be doing more great stuff on other characters with better sales and can stick around longer.
Well, that's the thing. And he made those characters fun again, you know, and viable again. And they came, you know, it was kind of born out of Civil War, wasn't it? Or was it Secret Invasion?
I would say more out of the Wisdom miniseries he did a few years
okay.
back.
Yeah.
So,
but, you know, you just wonder what's going to happen with these characters now. You know, we'll see them again in 5 years, maybe in some one-shot Marvel Spotlight backup. You know, who knows?
Well, it does seem like there are certain characters that are doomed to be the lesser runs, the B-list.
Yeah.
You know, through no fault of their own or whatever, that there's some characters that just aren't going to be in an A-list book.
Right.
Or if it is, it's not because of them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And half the characters in MI-13 or whatever fit that bill.
Oh, I know. But I'm thinking maybe a Captain Britain can join one of the Avenger groups or something, you know? Or show up in X-Men and fight along Psylocke or something like that.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot they could do with that.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, positioning that character, get him on the Avengers for a bit, and then position him kind of midway between the Avengers, the X-Men, and, you know, the solo characters and whatnot in the DC or the Marvel Universe, I mean.
Yeah, have him show up in Captain America for a one-shot and,
yeah.
you know, see what happens.
Make him a player for a bit and then surround
him.
We're
telling Ed Brubaker what to do. You know, I love it.
Oh, we're not telling Brubaker what to do, but this is a character that they could get more mileage out of.
Yeah.
And just with a little better positioning, because the way they had positioned Captain Britain in MI-13, it was, I don't want to say doomed to failure, but it seemed like an ancillary book that you didn't have to go read.
Mm-hmm.
Just like right now, they've positioned War Machine as a spinoff to the Iron Man stuff that's irrelevant to Iron Man.
Right.
So, if you can position some of these books or some of these secondary characters to where they've got enough tangential ties to other popular stuff. Something to where people who are loving all the Avengers stuff have an excuse to check it out. Same with the people with reading the X-Men stuff, or the Avengers, or I mean, I guess I already said Avengers, but you know what I mean. The Fantastic Four, all that stuff.
We talked about it, you know, many months ago about Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy. But those seem to be doing very well, and I'm not reading War of Kings right now. I got to pick up that hardcover, but from what I hear, it's a pretty good storyline.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Abnett and Lanning, though, doing some great work over at Marvel.
They are. They're doing excellent work. And they're playing in their little own sandbox, and everybody's kind of leaving them alone, which is nice. But then you get into like Jeff Parker's Agents of Atlas, and there's a book that I would like to have seen do so well, and now that's going to be in a backup somewhere in some title. And that's really too bad. I mean, that should have been a miniseries all along, I think.
I read the first issue. That's one of the ones I'm behind on. I've got issues 2 through 9 sitting in a short box waiting to be read.
Mm.
So.
And 10 just came out today on Wednesday, or yesterday. So.
Ah, so I'll get it in my next DCBS shipment.
You'll get it. Yeah, you will.
But, you know, they've got to do what they're going to. They got to publish what they can sell.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are saying, oh, these lower selling books, they'll make up for it on the trade side. Before we get below rank, well, actually, when we hit rank 43 this month, we're below 2,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they can sustain books at that level, but we're not seeing the high level of sales on the trade side, either initially or over time, that would justify keeping a book around.
You know, just to compare, what is a Secret Six doing these days on the comic side, John? Can we compare that to like an Agents of Atlas? Because they're kind of like a, you know, weird little side group that's,
I think that's a fair comparison.
Yeah, I mean, they're on issue, what, 12 or something
11
like that.
Is the one I've got numbers for this month. They did 24,339 units on the monthly side.
What number? Okay, wait, Secret Six. There they are.
Rank 81 there.
81. And where's Agents of Atlas? Well, Guardians of the Galaxy are just above them.
Agents of Atlas is at rank 88 on the comic side with 23,000.
So, okay, there they are. They're right below. 200. So you got Agents and Secret Six and Guardians. They're all kind of right there.
And this is the level of sales on the monthly side that's more so at DC than Marvel. It's justifiable to keep it around.
Right.
But you start dropping below the 20,000 unit mark on either side, you got to question, are they going to keep it around?
Well, there's Agents of Atlas number 8 at 103, just above the 20,000 unit mark. So
now, do we have trade sales for any of these titles? I'm looking on the Marvel trades to see if we've got another kind of mid-list, low-list comic title. And
well, what would be, what's mid-list?
Again, I'm thinking the 20 to 30,000 range.
Okay.
20 to 25,000, really. To see what those titles are doing these days on the trade side.
Right.
And, you know, would that be enough to keep them around? And
there's nothing yet. Maybe too early to have them out yet.
Let's flip to DC and see if we've got something on that side.
Hmm.
And nothing. I'm not seeing anything there either.
Runaways, maybe, but Runaways got canceled.
But, I mean, we get to the point where some of these things, like Wildcat World's End, it did, you know, 1,000 units or so. Birds of Prey, Platinum Flats, which I believe was the last Birds of Prey trade paperback, 1,518 units. So, I mean, are you getting enough off of that, which has, what, 6 issues in it, to justify keeping the title around?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you better off rebooting the title essentially as Batgirl and seeing what happens? So, I mean, there's this myth that, oh, well, they'll make it up on the trade side, and that the trade sales are just so healthy that it doesn't matter really how well the comics are doing. And certainly through Diamond, which is where I think the lion's share of repeat comic book buyers go, you know, or are serviced through via their stores, we're not seeing those sales trends.
Right.
And last time I compared the year-end book scan numbers to the Diamond numbers, that doesn't seem to be happening in the mass market either. Certainly there's sales to be had there, and, you know, anywhere the publishers can get the sales, that's awesome, that's great. But it's not like the mass market's this promised land of high sales either.
Right.
For the most part. Certainly in some cases, you know, they go through the roof there. Surrogates Volume 2 may be a good example of that once the movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we had only, what, 4 items above 5,000 units on the trades list this month.
Right.
Which isn't bad, but isn't setting the world on fire either.
Now, are the comics numbers down?
Comics numbers this month actually were pretty good, but mm-hmm. you had Captain America Reborn number 1, Blackest Night number 1, Batman and Robin number 2, Amazing Spider-Man 600, 2 issues of Green Lantern, mm-hmm. all of which did over 100,000. So, I mean, it was just a strong month on a couple of points on the comic side. But I tend not to go on a month-to-month basis so much as how the various comic titles are doing. And it's a different way of looking at the monthly horse race.
Right.
And while I certainly see the value in the month-to-month stuff, you can't really use that to predict what decisions publishers may or may not make going forward. you know, gee, the total dollars were up this month or down this month for Marvel or DC. Great. Why? Well, until you look at what titles were in there, you can't tell. And even when you look at what titles, unless you know if those titles are going up or going down, I mean, you see a Blackest Night bump up sales of, what was it? It was, Bob and I were just talking about this, Titans, number 15. It bumped up by 42.86% on the monthly side because it was Blackest Night crossover. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not quite the doubling of sales we saw on Civil War or whatnot, but sure makes me think DC's going to try to follow up Blackest Night with another event. I would. Wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good business, at least until it stops working. So, I just am seeing what looks like a flattening of sales on the trade side, and it makes me wonder if there's just too many different items out, and that's clogging up the system.
Right.
So, I think that's about all I got this month.
I think that's all I got too, man.
So what's coming up on your show?
What's coming up on my show? Well, I just, September is kind of like an interview month for me. I had on Steve Saffo.
Cool. Good guy.
Fighting Books. Steve was a great guy. He just talked about his new book, The Best of Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, and his upcoming Simon and Kirby library that he's got coming out.
I talked with him some about that in San Diego, so yeah.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, he's a nice guy. And I also talked with Terry Moore, Strangers in Paradise and Echo.
Cool.
Terry was a great guy. We talked about the Strangers in Paradise omnibus, and which was a lot of fun. One interesting thing about that was that when the issues for Strangers in Paradise were being published, they did not come out in sequential order the way he wanted it to. So now with the omnibus, he went back and reordered a lot of the comics, which was kind of fun. So now you can read it in the correct reading order.
Why didn't they come out in the order he wanted?
They just didn't. They, due to whatever time constraints or whatever, it didn't fit. I mean, there's only a few comics out of the whole 100-issue run.
Right.
But for whatever reason, you know, I mean, it's funny because it was his comics, too.
That is kind of bizarre.
Yeah, I think it had to do more with the trades.
I can see that than
the comics. So, but so if you got the trades, the this is the correct reading order, which is kind of cool. And he still has copies left over; they are not sold out. And then you know, some other interviews coming up too. So I got the 20 years of Dilbert cartoon book that I'm going to be covering pretty soon too.
That should be good.
Getting into a little bit of the comic strip art.
Cool.
So what about you?
Let's see. We've got the previews teleconference and stuff going on. This episode will go up on the 11th. The previews teleconference is tonight. As people listen to it, if they listen to it when it first comes out, and of course everyone would be, no, I don't know. So if you're listening to this after September 11th, 2009, you missed the teleconference this month. We go through previews cover to cover, not page by page, because that would just be insane. We use it as an excuse to talk about comics.
Right.
You know, we'll have a lot of discussion on what people are thinking of Blackest Night, about the Disney buyout of Marvel. You name it, we'll talk about it. We also are going to be doing our preview spotlight recording that week. So the 11th will be the end of the 11th, maybe a little into the 12th if you're lucky. For when you can send in short MP3 clips of just what you found in previews that you think people ought to be aware of and go by.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be reviewing on Monday, the 14th of September's weekly comic spotlight, which will be number 108 of that. We're going to review Red Tornado number 1, Torch number 1, and Hercules Knives of Kush number 2. And I'm trying to think what else.
I'm interested to hear what you think of Red Tornado.
I'm looking forward to that one, actually. I like the character. He was one of the main guys on the Satellite Era when I kind of really got into the Justice League. So, hopefully it'll be a good series. In the past, the miniseries they've done for him, not so good.
Well, he was big in, what was it?
Young Justice.
No, but in recent.
Justice League.
Justice League, but right before that, was that Countdown he was in?
Oh, no. 52.
52 he was big in.
He wasn't big in 52. Did he do anything other than utter 52 a few times?
Well, he kind of...
He was a plot point. He was a prop
in
52.
He was a plot point. And then that led into the Justice League, but... Yeah. I'm just wondering if he was if he's being overexposed.
Do we need to have a miniseries for him? No, but I'm not objecting to it.
Right, okay.
I think everything's overexposed these days. We got too many titles coming out.
We do.
I mean, I had my last shipment from DCBS, 50 new comics this week.
Mm.
And that's part of why I'm so far behind on my reading. There's just too much coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But, so yeah, that's what we got planned. Again, the weekly spotlight every Monday. Trying to do a few episodes here and there. But until I get caught up on my reading and a few other things kind of under control, you know, we're not going hog wild on the extra episodes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we did release the spotlight on the Radical stuff as kind of our first publisher spotlight. We took all the Radical interviews we've done over the months and kind of strung them together. Future publisher spotlights may take completely different formats. We may talk to one of the publishers or one of the creators there, or just Bob and I may talk about what we thought of a given publisher, past or present, you know.
Mm.
But we'll see, you know. And again, those are on a as-we-get-to-them basis. That's pretty much all I got.
Good deal.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.